Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday's edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. I'm broadcasting through the facilities of ShakeAndWakeRadio.com and being simulcast on the Truth Be Told Radio Networks. Welcome to the show. All our stuff that's produced here is done by viewer donation, guys. Always ask for a little bit of help at the start of the show. If you like what these people are doing, the amount of time being put in behind the scenes to bring these programs to you, they would appreciate a cup of coffee or even $5 thrown at the kitty. If you can do that, it'd be much appreciated. And as always, I like to start the show thanking my producer, because if I don't, I forget the end, and then I really feel bad. Thanks, Steve, for what you do, buddy. You're a blessing in my life. I've got Ron Tyler and Dave DeLisle in with me today. Ron runs, of course, the Emergency Managed Associates, and Dave was PPC candidate for someplace up there in northern Ontario. What's the name of the place, Dave?
Algoma, Manitoulin, and Kapuskasing Racing Riding.
There you go. Dave was the PPC candidate up there in the last federal, and welcome to the show, guys. We're going to talk about this real spike in earthquake activity we seem to be seeing going on around the world, and a couple of zones that I think people need to be made aware of right now is the potential for some bad stuff to happen. And of course, one of them is the Cascadia subduction. Ron's show is pretty well focused on following earthquake activity. So he does a lot more looking into this I do. And I kind of wanted to get him in today to give you guys a little heads up on what could possibly be happening on the old planet Earth here in the next couple, 3 weeks. Some stuff's pretty, I'd say it's a little bit alarming, to say the least. Welcome to the show, Ron, and welcome to the show, Dave. What do you want to talk about first there, Ron? Because I know there's a pile of stuff going on.
Yeah, there is. I'm right on my show, if you guys are joining me on the Emergency Management Associates Network on YouTube, we've got Washington highlighted here in the left side of your screen here, and they are hiding earthquakes big time. I went perusing the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network site earlier, and they have not shown any tremors at all as of yesterday, none. Yet we've had something like 10,000 tremors hitting the Pacific Northwest in terms of southern Vancouver Island all the way down to northern California. And I have slides here I'm going to show you later, showing you the tremors the last few days. And yesterday and today, of course, they don't show anything present day at all. They show it 24 hours before that, but yesterday they don't show any tremors or earthquakes at all. Today, here we have a 1.3 up in northwestern Washington near Rosager, Washington, I believe it's pronounced, Rosager, Washington, a 1.3. Then we go down to Mount Rainier, and I'm focusing in on Mount Rainier right now, and they show one crazy tremor, a 0.9 right down the throat of Mount Rainier. And we know darn well that there are a lot more tremors and earthquakes here at Mount Rainier. We've seen them. We've shown them on seismograms. Then we go south from there over to Mount St. Helens. Here we show another tremor right down the center of Mount Rainier here. Okay, right down the center, another 0.9. So we have two 0.9s, one up at Rainier and one at Mount St. Helens. And that's BS. We know darn well there's more than that here at Mount St. Helens. And then almost directly north of there, in the foothills of Mount St. Helens, we have another 0.6 tremor. Okay? There's a lot more than that. But they're not showing anything.
Well,
until,
Ron,
yes.
Who's hiding this? The USGS? Where are you getting your information that the USGS is not showing?
Okay. I'm showing the map from the USGS map right now. They're not showing much of anything. We know darn well there are there. Over in Cascadia, up in the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, I pulled up their information. They're not showing squat. Nothing. You have to go to individual seismograms to pull information. And I have one seismogram over in northwestern Washington that shows quite a few tremors. The seismogram itself.
Where do you get the seismograms from, Ron?
From the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, PNSN.org. Guys, okay, you can
so
go to
PNSN.org. So people can go to that site right now and see what you're talking about.
Yes, okay.
So why? How do they get away with not reporting this, Ron?
Because they don't want anybody to know what's going on. I've said this on my show, and I'll say it again. Why are they doing it? Because they don't want people to know about it. Because if people knew about what was going on, what's going to happen? They're going to move out of the area. They're going to flee the area. And that's the last thing the politicians want. We employ the politicians through paying our taxes. If we pay our taxes, the politicians have a job. But if we leave these coastal areas or anywhere near the coast of Washington, Oregon, or even California, then those politicians that cover that area are going to be without a job. The politicians in D.C. and the local politicians. So the politicians in D.C. are telling the USGS and PNSN, the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, don't report it. Don't report it. And it's not the everyday employee of PNSN possibly or the USGS. It's the upper management that's telling everybody else, don't report it. The politicians are telling upper management's telling everybody else, don't report it. That's why whenever we catch anything, we report it. And then we get buffered for doing it. We get buffered heavily. They sometimes have tried to take us off the air. They have actually done that several times. Mm. But right now, I'm showing a 2.0 over in Butte Falls, Oregon, southern Oregon, a 2.0 there. But PNSN's not showing anything in Oregon. Nothing. Huh. Not a darn thing.
So and down now, here, I think, go ahead. Go,
down here in the southern part of the Cascadia subduction region, over in Petrolia, California, we have a 2.6 magnitude earthquake here. 2.6
on, onshore or offshore?
It's just barely offshore. It's actually on the San Andreas Fault. Okay? And in this area, and I'm going to zoom in here so everybody can see where this earthquake is. This is out in the Pacific, slightly offshore on the San Andreas Fault. But if you'll notice where the San Andreas Fault comes together with two other faults, it's called the Triple Junction. The Triple Junction, the San Andreas Fault goes out northwest here and meets up with the Cascadia Subduction Zone, which is the earthquake fault that's running north here that you see. And it meets up with the Gorda Escarpment that runs straight west away from the coast. Those three earthquake faults are the earthquake faults that everybody is watching. And the reason they're watching that is because an earthquake on the Cascadia Subduction Zone, anywhere in the Cascadia region, and I'm going to back this slide out so you can see the whole region here, any earthquake in this area is going to trigger the San Andreas Fault. So if we get a 9.0, a 10.0 earthquake, even maybe an 8.0 earthquake up here in the Farallon Fault area or the Juan de Fuca Fault area just off the coast of Seattle here, that's going to set off the seismic energy going north to Alaska, all the way up the coast of Canada to Alaska, all the way down the coast through to this Triple Junction, and it's going to set off the San Andreas Fault. 2 years ago, Christmas time on December 23rd, just 2 years ago, Chris Goldfinger, who's a professor of geology at the University of Oregon, was at a convention or seminar in San Francisco, and he said, when a reporter asked him what would happen when the Cascadia megathrust earthquake happens, he said there's a darn good chance of the Cascadia triggering the San Andreas Fault. He says there's a better than 100% chance that that's going to happen.
Well, Ron, if the Cascadia experiences a megathrust, then the last thing we'll be worrying about is the San Andreas, because that's just to be an offshoot of the damage that's done. We're talking about something that will kill millions and millions and millions and millions of people because of course, because of the nuclear power plants that are up and operating on the West Coast. We only have five to deal with on the West Coast, but those five are going to get hit with a very, very bad day. And
yes.
I don't want to see five Fukushimas on the West Coast, but that, to me, right now, the rest of it, sure, there's millions of people around the San Andreas, and it's going to cause major damage, but my biggest concerns is a tidal wave hitting the West Coast. That would be catastrophic for the whole population of North America.
And that's
I don't want to express how bad that could be. That could be literally, without exaggerating, and I'm not exaggerating, it could almost be a life-ending event for most of North America because of the nuclear power plants. And we get meltdown after meltdown happening on the West Coast. The world's going to have a very, very bad day, and that's what the potential is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and
let's get Dave in here for a minute. I wanted Dave just to speak for a minute, Ron, if it's okay, about some of the solar stuff we're seeing, sure. And then we'll get back to earthquake because there's a few other we want to talk about.
They don't.
Dave, you got to get in for a minute because it's been 10 minutes or 11 minutes, and I haven't heard a word from you yet.
That's okay. I've been listening. I like listening to Ron, but Ron's absolutely right.
Well, so do I.
I'm of the opinion that the Cascadia is going to go at any minute. I mean, really, from the things that I've seen, plus the stuff that they're not telling us that we aren't even aware of yet that have happened, I'm of the opinion that it's going to go at any time. I mean, we're seeing movement. But anyway, with the solar stuff, we got hit with a G3 storm again. And this is really knocking out things, and it's also adding power.
So how bad is a C3, Dave? So people can get an idea that's listening.
A G3 is pretty bad. I mean, when you start thinking about the amount of solar storms that we've had and hits from the sun in the last 2 weeks, there's been about 15 big hits that we've taken. The Earth has taken from these solar storms, and some of them were good ones. And the solar winds. All this is doing is adding more fuel to the fire and adding more heat to the Earth's core.
That's exactly it. And the solar flares that we're getting, the solar eruptions at the surface of the sun send out these plasma balls, these plasma flares out from the sun, and those flares go out into space. And lately, we've been getting hit by these solar flares every day here at the Earth, every day, because they keep hitting day after day after day, and we keep getting these auroras, and they're fantastic auroras. Now, there's nothing that says that these solar flares aren't doing damage, because they are doing damage in some way, shape, or form, but the solar flares are heating up the core of the Earth. And heating up the core of the Earth, they're also heating up the plates. Everywhere where we have an earthquake, it's because we have solar heating and electromagnetic radiation coming from alignment of the planets. And all that heating does is heat up the edge of the plates. And where those plates meet, there's junk and grime and dirt and sediment and biological materials down there at the edge of the plates. And when that stuff heats up, it turns to an oily, greasy substance that makes it easier for the plates to move. And then we have the earthquakes. And that's what we've been seeing. Almost without exception, when we've had large and very strong and even major earthquakes, it's after a CME has been launched from the sun and it's hit the Earth. Almost without exception. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, lubricating those plates doesn't sound like a good idea to me, Ron.
No. But that's what's happening. All that junk that holds those plates together is heated up. And when that happens, that junk turns to greasy, oily substance. And we've seen that in laboratories. We've seen it in real life here in front of me. Whenever we heat that stuff up on a burner or even on a sidewalk, we've seen stuff heat up on the sidewalk and it turns into a slimy stuff. Huh. We've all seen that. And that's just heating up at the plates.
What about La Palma right now? Is there anything still going on over there? Or has that kind of died down? Is it going to have an effect on that?
It's having an effect on that. And in fact, it's interesting that you would mention that too, and I'm glad you did, because Pacific Northwest Seismic Network doesn't cover it. The USGS doesn't cover it. They just don't. Now, I'm going to show you something right now for those of you that are on our network here. Let me take down these earthquakes that I put up that were in the Cascadia Subduction region on Thursday. We had 4.1 or 4.4 on the Blanco Fracture Zone. But right now, I'm going to show you some earthquakes here over at La Palma today. Almost invariably, we have anywhere from from 2 to 4 or 5 earthquakes over La Palma every day. Every day. Right now, we have one. This is over at El Paso, over on the western side, actually not El Paso, Los Llanos, over on the western side of the spine of the island where we had the volcanic eruption. The volcanic eruption was on the southern spine of La Palma. Here we have an earthquake. Okay. Los Llanos. This is almost directly west of where that fissure had opened up there, and we had that earthquake. This just happens to be a 1.9 tremor, 1.9, 2.0 tremor. Okay. It's still happening. We only have one there, and then we have one south, well, actually two, just off the southernmost island down here. This is a 2.3 here.
Unfortunately, we don't have video over in Shake and Wake, so
no.
You know, people might not be able to follow you quite to exactly where you're talking about geographically, Ron, but the whole Canary Island situation over there right now is a ticking time bomb. We all know that.
It is.
When it decides to make the big move, we don't know, but we know that the crack between the two separate land masses is growing exponentially. That I've been watching. It's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, they will pull apart, and eventually, we will see that landslide that we all dread. But I just wanted to hear if that volcano was still erupting, because it's kind of gone out of the news lately.
It's not erupting right now. I believe it's recharging. It's going to erupt again. I feel it's going to erupt again. If it doesn't erupt in the exact same place, I believe it will be just south of that fissure that opened up there. But it's still going to erupt. Over here, northwest of La Palma, we have another island. It's called Jorge Island. This is in the Azores. At the northernmost part of this island here, we have a bunch of earthquakes that have been happening. Today, it doesn't show anything. And I'm showing this on the EMSC map. It doesn't show any earthquakes, but that place has also had like 4,500 earthquakes in the past month. It's because that volcano is getting ready to pop again. Again, it's magma beneath the surface. All of these volcanoes are recharging. They're all recharging. Then we go, and Barry spoke about this when we first came on the air, and they just took it down. All be dipped. They just took it down.
Yeah, they're taking a lot of stuff down, Ron.
Yeah, they are. Let me see if the USGS still has it here, because EMSC is taking it down, and they had it here. That's what really gripes me, is they had it, and they've taken it down. And I hate saying this, there's no excuse for incompetence, but that's what they exhibit when they take down or destroy evidence, in this case, maps that showed the earthquake. Here it is on the USGS. The EMSC took it down. This is the earthquake that Barry was... No, I'm sorry. This is South America. That's at Peru. They did take this one in Tunisia down as well. Okay? There's one over here in South Africa here today in Tunisia, and they took that one down. There's no excuse for it. There's none. USGS and the EMSC took it down. No excuse. Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you a question when you finished talking there.
Go ahead.
Well, that real good-sized quake that hit just off Fukushima there about 10 days ago, did you ever hear anything about the results of that, the effects? Because as far as I can see, they dodged a bullet.
They did dodge a bullet. They dodged a huge bullet. The only reason they didn't have more damage than they did was because that thing was offshore and the ocean waters of the Pacific absorbed most of the seismic energy. Most, not all of it, most.
Well, it wasn't it wasn't actually on the subduction zone too, Ron. It was a land-based earthquake. Go ahead.
Right. But they dodged a huge bullet. Huge bullet. And today off of Hasaki, Japan, over off of Honshu, we had another 5.0 offshore there. And just north of there, we had another 4.7 moderate quake there. So we've had a large earthquake and a 4.7 moderate earthquake off of Honshu today. And yesterday we had another earthquake off of Hokkaido, which is the northernmost island there in Japan. And for those of you that didn't know, there was a volcanic eruption over here at Kamchatka Peninsula. And that ash is already over Alaska.
Kamchatka, that's the coast of Russia, correct?
Yes, it is. It's a peninsula of Russia out there that meets up with the Aleutian Island Fault.
Right, right. Wow. So how many volcanoes are going off right now, Ron? Do you know? I looked at the number there a week ago, and I saw 54, which is up from a normal. They say normally at any time over the last 30, 40 years that they've been studying this, that we see about 40 active volcanoes on any given day on the planet. But the number I saw was 54. Is that fairly correct?
That's fairly correct. And I believe today we have like 42 active volcanoes actually erupting today. Down here, actually, I shouldn't say down here, over here in Japan, just off the west coast of Japan, it's not off the coast, it's on the coast, it's on land in Honshu, borderline Kyushu and Honshu, there is Sakurajima. And that thing is steaming, it's out there, it's not actively erupting, but it erupts about every once a month or once every other month, and it is out there. As well as in that same caldera, we have Aso-san volcano. So we have two major volcanoes over there, and they both spit up once a month. They keep doing that. And then offshore, off of southern Japan, we have another one down there. Okay? That one keeps erupting all the time. It's not erupting right now. And those of you on the Emergency Management Associates Network, I'm showing the island offshore from Japan where that is. Okay? It's crazy.
What about the Cascadia Range, Ron? I know there's quite a bit of activity. You talked about Mount St. Helens, and you talked about Rainier. Do you think you're going to see an eruption there in the very near future?
Yes. Yes, we will. Back when the Cascadia earthquake happened, the megathrust earthquake happened some over 300 years ago, close, I think it's 340, 345 years ago, that happened. There was a mariner that was off the coast that recorded in his logbooks that he thought he saw Mount Rainier, the glacier peak, erupting. And that was during the earthquake. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what we're going to see here, and we have seen evidence of these volcanoes getting ready to literally erupt. Now, Mount Rainier has been getting ready for quite some time. And Mount Baker, even up to the north near Canada, has been steaming great guns. We've seen a great deal of steam. Even this past Thursday when I checked the seismogram there, we saw a great deal of steam going up Mount Baker. Then we go down to Mount Rainier. It's been steaming like a steam locomotive from the 1950s, as well as Mount St. Helens. And both those volcanoes are on a watch list right now.
I know the bulge in Mount St. Helens has been growing. I know.
Yes,
that.
It has. It's been growing for 2 years now.
Yeah, for about 2 years.
And then Mount St. Helens, the USGS has put that on a watch list as well. It's gone from yellow to orange because there are so many earthquakes and tremors hitting Mount St. Helens that they're afraid it's going to erupt at any moment. It's steaming like a son of a gun right now. And it's sad that USGS is only showing two small tremors north and at the summit of Mount Rainier. Two tremors. We know far well that there are more than that. And even south of there, even south of Mount St. Helens, over at Mount Hood, This is another volcano, and I'm showing it for those of you on the Emergency Management Associates Network. I'm showing that volcano right now. Over on the southern side, the southern flank of Mount Hood here, we're having tons of earthquakes. This is also another volcano that they're saying is going to blow. Okay? It's continued showing signs of an imminent eruption for many months now. And then we go down south of there. We go down south of there to Sisters Volcanoes. There's three volcanoes down here that are in line. They're all part of the Three Sisters Volcanic Group. They're showing signs of an imminent eruption as well. I can pull up seismograms, show you all the volcanism that's going on beneath the volcano and all the earthquakes that are happening all around it. And there's three volcanoes. And then we go south of there over to Newberry Volcano, and Newberry Volcano is also showing signs of an imminent eruption. Okay? That's just in Washington and Oregon. Okay? Then we go down to Northern California, still in the Cascade Mountain Range, and we have Shasta and Mount Lassen that are also steaming to great guns. And Lassen right now looks like it has more earthquakes than even Mount Shasta does. Okay? That's a lot. That's huge.
Ron, is it Mount Hood that's blown its top, or part of the top fell off of it?
Yes.
They didn't even mention any of that?
No, they haven't mentioned a single word, and I keep on top of that too.
Part of the crater collapse, correct?
Yeah. The top, the rim of the volcano, the lip of the volcano collapsed. Now, what causes that? There are basically two causes that could make that happen. Number one, magmatic activity that is shaking that part of the volcano so hard, causing that rim to collapse. Okay? Or an eruption, and it's not erupting yet. Not yet. Okay? But I've got pictures that showed some of our viewers sent me showing that the rim collapsed. I can show before and after pictures of what Mount St. Helens or Mount Hood looked like. And we can clearly see from those pictures then and now that rim has collapsed.
So do you believe the Earth is in a wobble right now, Ron?
I believe it's probably in somewhat of a wobble. And I'm saying that the Earth, what has happened is we are in a pole shift type of situation. And the Earth is tilting more than ever. And not just that, but we have so much magma activity that the equator area, the equatorial region of the Earth, is expanded. Okay? And that will affect the Earth. Affect the orbit of the Earth. Now, I believe the Earth is wobbling a little bit. We have an Earth wobble going on. Okay? And it's an orbital, it has to do with the orbital dynamics of the Earth. That happens. But all of this is contributing to all the activity around the world of what's going on with earthquakes and volcanoes and plate tectonic movement. It's just incredible. It's totally incredible. We had another 5.0 off the coast of Mexico the other day. We've had large to very strong earthquakes down here in the South Pacific. Today, in the South Pacific, near Vanuatu, now this is just 64 kilometers off the coast, about 58 miles west-southwest of Norsup, Vanuatu, we had another 6.3 magnitude earthquake. And there was a small, minor tsunami. And I'm saying 6-inch difference between normal sea level in that area and what the sea level was like after this 6.3 earthquake. That is normal. Okay? It did not generate a huge tsunami. There was a tsunami alert issued, but it was quickly retracted when it was noticed that there was really no need for it. NOAA decided there was no need for it. but I'm showing this earthquake down here in Vanuatu. Okay. And again, this is right on the subduction zone. This area, folks, is one of the biggest subduction zones in the world. There are seven different plates interacting here. Seven right. different plates, one subducting right. under the other here. Right. That's why we have these.
So anything can happen. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say that what I find funny is that we can see proof of larger earthquakes. And yeah. what the USGS and the Pacific Northwest do is they'll say, well, no, it wasn't a 6.5. It was a 5.9.
Yeah.
And you have the proof that it was a bigger quake than what they're trying to tell you. It's like, well, nothing to see here, folks.
Well, it's, you know, I look at all this cover-up being done by governments, and if it's all true, then there's got to be a very nefarious reason for it. Obviously, they just don't keep that information away from the public when it means the possibility of people living or dying. So there's got to be some kind of agenda going on in the background, exactly how it all ties together with everything else we see going on. I'm not quite sure, but it doesn't sound like normal to underreport all this to the American people.
It's plausible deniability. Plausible yeah. deniability. Something happens, we knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
And down here south of Australia, I'm showing the slide here, we have another earthquake here. And this is not funny, but it's very interesting. I have friends that live all over Australia, from Victoria to Queensland, Sydney, all over. And they are afraid because southwestern and southeastern Australia have been hit with only minor earthquakes. Southeastern Australia last year had a 6.3. They hit one of their towns, and there was actually incredibly only minor damage in that town in southwestern Australia. But here, south of Australia today, we have a moderate 4.8. And this is over on the Antarctic Fault that's south of Australia. Now, what Australians are worried about is to the north, Indonesia and Papua New Guinea are getting hit all over the place, and they are, in fact, having large earthquakes there as well as Vanuatu, the Loyalty Islands, New Caledonia, Tonga, Fiji, New Zealand. Everybody's having earthquakes all over, north, south, and east and west. Australians are worried that this energy is at some point going to slip over to Australia, and they're going to have a mega earthquake there themselves. And that's going to happen too. We have a lot of Australian viewers and listeners here to this program. They're worried it's going to hit, and they have right to be worried. They have a real right to be worried. It's happening. We can show the evidence of it.
How many supervolcanoes do we have in the world, Ron?
Oh, gosh.
I think it's seven is the number, correct?
Yes, I believe it's seven.
Supervolcanoes in the world today that are classified as supervolcanoes. Yeah. The last one we saw was in Toba, 74,000 yeah. years ago.
Yeah. And I'm showing on my slide now, I'm showing a picture of Taupo volcano over on the North Island of New Zealand. That's a supervolcano there.
Okay. When Toba erupted 74,000 years ago, Ron, it literally blew the whole island right off the earth.
Yeah.
there was an island, and all there is now is a big hole in the ground. That was the last, I think that was the last, I was looking into supervolcanoes, I think that was the last actual supervolcano that we've experienced. And that, like I said, was 74,000 years ago. So we're sitting on seven possible time bombs right now that could cause havoc all around the world. It's like I get up every day and I go, well, looks like it's going to be a good day. There's no volcanoes going off, nothing major to worry about, so I'll carry on. But we're literally living on a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. We've got a major volcano in Peru. We've got two over in the western United States in terms of Long Valley and in east central California. And we also have Yellowstone, but that's not all. That's not it. There's also Superior. Over in Lake Superior, we have a major volcano there.
Yeah, I heard about. I've actually heard about that one. I don't know a lot about that one, Ron.
Yeah, that's honest. A big deal.
Is that classified as a super volcano?
Yes, it is.
So and it's then seven on the planet.
Yeah, then over on the northeast coast of the United States, we have another one encompassing Maine and Ontario, Canada over there. That area is sitting in the middle of a caldera. All those people that are living there are sitting literally in the middle of a volcanic caldera. And at some point in time, it's going to show signs.
Well, I didn't know that. I did not know that. So there you go. I just learned something that I didn't realize. They were sitting on top of an old, old extinct volcano. Because they do become active, and they start anytime one of them can be starting to become alive again. We know that. So that's kind of interesting, Ron. I didn't know that.
It's crazy. You know, and today in the North Atlantic, we have another large earthquake there in the North Mid-Atlantic, 5.0. And then we had another moderate earthquake in the southern Atlantic over in the South Sandwich Islands today as well, a 4.9, 5.0. I'm going to call it a large earthquake down there in the South Sandwich Islands because that's what it is. We have what we like to refer to as the 0.9 society within the agencies where they have to downgrade an earthquake so as to make everybody say, oh, this was just a lesser earthquake. It's not a big deal. It was. Every time they've downgraded an earthquake, usually it's because it was a much larger earthquake. And I'm talking at least a half magnitude. In other words, they have 4.9 here. It was probably a 5.4, 5.5. That's what happens. You can't trust them. They've shown that they can't be trusted. You know, and yesterday it was interesting to note they had a 5.3 over in the Rat Islands of the Aleutian Islands yesterday, and they first said it was a 5.3. They upgraded to a 5.6. That never happens. Never happens. Down in the South Pacific, they had another earthquake. They did the same thing there. They upgraded it. That never happens.
We talk about a 5.3 and a 5.6, and people go, well, that's not much difference. Explain to people how much difference it is between a 5.3 and a 5.6 in energy, Ron.
Okay, the energy between a 5.3 and a 5.6 is this. A 5.3 earthquake is a very large earthquake. That's to start off. Anything from 5.0 to 5.9 is considered a large earthquake. But every point is 10 times the strength of the previous quake. So we go from 5.3 to 5.4. That 5.4 is 10 times as strong as a 5.3. We get up to 5.6, and folks, that's 30 times as strong. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, I knew the equation, but it's almost mind-boggling when you think about it, Ron.
Yeah.
With the difference in energy on a point on the scale, it's just it really boggles your mind. Then you start talking about sevens and eights. The amount of energy that we're dealing with is phenomenal. How many volcanoes, I wanted to ask you, how many volcanoes are under the ocean that we don't see on the planet?
Oh, gosh, hundreds.
In comparison to volcanoes, how many volcanoes on land approximately, because I kind of know the number, and how many underneath the sea that we don't see?
There's 69 volcanoes in Alaska alone. They say there's 169 in the United States mainland. Okay, mainland. That includes the craters that are not erupting, the cones that are not erupting, but they're all over. I think we have 5 or 6 in Texas. We have 3 in New Mexico. We have 3 in Arizona. Okay, that's just 3 of the states. If we look around the United States, there are 3 volcanoes in Missouri, 2 in Arkansas. Okay, then we go over here to North Carolina. There's 3 more volcanoes here in North Carolina. There's a big, huge volcano called Kings Mountain in Southern Carolina, and it has had a lot of earthquakes hitting it lately. We talk about that at least once a week. Kings Mountain, South Carolina. And Connecticut, for example, Connecticut. We've got Sleeping Giant Volcano there. It's an Indian, Sleeping Indian Volcano in Connecticut. And folks, that's a big deal. Just this past year, it started putting out a rotten egg smell, a sulfur smell from around the volcano. And it was it wasn't smoking where you could actually see the smoke, but you could smell that sulfur odor within miles of that volcano. It's there. And it had earthquakes. Well, it has had earthquakes. So it's there in Connecticut. There are volcanoes everywhere.
What about underneath the ocean, Ron? How many are underneath the ocean that we don't know about? In relation to how many on land as opposed to underneath the ocean that we never see?
Hundreds.
So hundreds. Compared to the ones on land, what do you say? There's three times as many, twice as many under the ocean, four times as many? Because we know the oceans represent 70% of the mass. Huh?
Well, I want to say maybe four times as many.
Well, that would probably be close to what it should be because, you know, the oceans only the land represents, 25% of our mass on the planet, right?
Right.
Plus is oceans. So that would fall in line with what we don't see. That's kind of interesting. What kind of effect is that going to have when these things start going off? Well, they go off all the time, and we never even hear about it, Ron.
Well, they go off all the time. The volcanoes are building islands. And at some point in time, some of these volcanoes are going to build up enough lava, and it's going to turn into an island. We see that happening all the time in the South Pacific, around Tonga and Samoa and Fiji. All the time there are what they call undersea mounts, seamount volcanoes that are erupting, and they're putting up pumice that floats on the ocean. Well, some of that eruptive material also stays flat on the seafloor, and it builds up to a cone, and pretty soon we have a regular volcano that's sticking up out of the air. That's how Puerto Rico started. Puerto Rico is a volcano.
Well, same thing with Hawaii.
Same thing with Hawaii.
Over the last millions and millions of years.
Yeah, same thing with Guam and the Canary Islands and the Azores. That's how they all started.
Yeah, the Canary Islands is all volcanic, correct, Ron?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what makes it so dangerous, that volcanic rock isn't like dealing with regular rock. And when you get rain and you combine that with earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, we talked about the Canary Islands lots of times over the years, but that's just one of the biggest potential dangers that the Earth is facing. If that thing ever did slide, it would be a very bad day for the east coast of North America.
Yeah.
It would be a bad day for the whole world because it would reciprocate around the whole world. But just another ticking time bomb.
Yeah. Like I said, we had that earthquake yesterday in the Aleutian Islands, at the Rat Islands, and today we now have a 4.7 earthquake aftershock from that one.
Yeah, Dave, you want to say something?
I was just going to say, I remember a few months ago they were saying about the one that's in Lake Superior, that it was actually warming up the water a bit, but I haven't heard much from that since.
Yeah.
In Lake Superior itself, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'd have to be something else because Lake Superior is an awfully big body of water.
Yeah, it is.
The last I heard about the warming of Superior was 2 or 3 months ago, and it said it rose 4 degrees.
4 degrees would be catastrophic for the fish, Ron.
Yeah.
Catastrophic.
It would.
Look at Yellowstone.
That's actually happening.
Yeah. Look at Yellowstone Lake in Yellowstone. That magma intrusion below Lake Yellowstone has heated up that lake tremendously. It's now like 80 degrees in that lake. It's almost killed off all the fish. Those cutthroat trout that lived in that lake used to be, their little homes were on the bottom of the lake. They fed off the plankton and the biological material at the bottom of the lake. And now it's heated up, and those fish can't live, and they're dying. They're found all over the shore of Yellowstone Lake. I used to fish there when I was a kid.
Huh.
I swam there in early 2000s. Went there with a bunch of friends and had a grand old time.
Well, we're definitely seeing lots of interesting things going on the planet right now, Ron. It makes you wonder what's going to happen next.
Yeah. You know,
my biggest concern of all of it is the Cascadia Coast, because how close it is to the West Coast. In some places, it's only 15 miles offshore. In some places, it's 60 miles offshore.
Yeah.
But regardless, when it ruptures, it's going to create a tsunami that's going to hit land pretty quick. And it's going to go one of these days. We know it based on the history of the subduction zone. We've seen over the last 10,000 years on that zone tells us that it's going to go again. It's going to go real quick. Soon. Yeah. It's overdue.
It is. So these undersea volcanoes are erupting. We have that Hunga Tonga Hapai volcano down in Tonga called the Hunga Tonga Hapai volcano. And it erupted under the sea, but it destroyed the island that was around it, completely obliterated the island. Now there's two small pieces of land on either side of the volcano. It's gone. The rest of the island's gone. You know, that happens. These undersea mounts are happening. We're seeing earthquakes at the undersea mounts, especially around the southeast side of the big island of Hawaii, all the time. So, yeah.
And they're hiding it. They're hiding information. And even if you look at Yellowstone, the information that's coming out of there from Mary Greeley and others, and yourself, Ron, there's so much information that they're not putting out. I mean, there's been some quakes and some decent quakes in areas where you don't want to see quakes, and they're not reporting them.
No, they're not. They have no intention of reporting. I've got Yellowstone up on my slide right now, and it shows no earthquakes at all here. No tremors, no quakes, no nothing. And that's just wrong.
I think what they should do is have a new university classroom and a new university education program for the young people on the planet to the evils and the dangers of nuclear power plants.
And
what the potential is on the west coast of the United States, America, and Canada, and Mexico right now as we talk. Because if people, young people really knew, Ron, what kind of potential we're looking at right now, it's absolutely mind-boggling what a major megathrust earthquake would do on the west coast of North America right now, given the proximity to land and the size of the earthquake and how big we're saying the tsunami. Some of the scientists say 50 feet. Other people say up to 100-foot tsunami. Well, if we had a 75-foot tsunami hit the west coast of North America, the whole world would be affected by that, folks, literally. So I think we should educate the young people about the dangers, especially of nuclear power plants, so that they raise their voice in one loud voice and tell the establishment to shut these things down, because there's all kinds of other ways we can generate power without boiling water through nuclear reaction. Go ahead.
It's crazy. It's crazy. We, at one point, just on the West Coast alone, we had, I think, 10 operating power plants on the West Coast.
Actually, on the West Coast, there's six, Ron.
There are six?
Five. There's five that are operating right now as we talk.
Yeah.
One has just been shut down. But on the West Coast, there's only six. Most of our nuclear power plants are on the East Coast. There's huge conglomeration of them on the East Coast, where all, of course, the population centers are. But on the West Coast here, we're only dealing with five. But even those five, if they got hit with a 50 to a 75-foot tsunami, folks, you're looking at a meltdown situation. They cannot shut them down fast enough to avoid a meltdown. And if that's to happen on the West Coast, well, of course, all our winds prevail from the west to the east. You look at that scenario and these things melting down, you'd be covering the whole United States of America with a huge, huge cloud of radioactive stuff that isn't very good for our health. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. It's not very good for anybody's health. And we look back to Fukushima to see what happened there. And that, the radioactive water is still being put into the Pacific Ocean. I would not knowingly eat any fish out of the Northern Pacific right now. None.
There's no denying the fact that it's showing up in our fish because they've monitored them. and we are seeing spikes in radiation in our salmon on the west coast of North America. That's not deniable. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. When I used to go fishing in, off San Diego, I saw some weird stuff. I saw fish with their eyes bugging out, and it wasn't the sheephead fish that lives at the bottom of the Pacific off offshore San Diego. It's called a sheep's head, and it's got eyes bugging out of its head. That's normal. But there are other fish that's not, like white bass off the coast with eyes bugging out of their heads. They're being affected by the radioactivity in the water.
They are so. They're reporting it everywhere. The Fraser Valley reservations, native reservations up the Fraser River are reporting huge spikes in radiation. I talked to fishermen that fish commercially here on the West Coast, and they're bringing up fish, and they're seeing growth on these fish that they'd never seen before. But, you know, the shocking part about it right now, I'll tell you, most people aren't aware of exactly what's going on with the salmon on the west coast of BC here and Oregon and Washington State and Alaska. But normally when a salmon returns to the watershed to swim up the river, to do its little thing and reproduce more little salmon so we have salmon for the next generation, well, normally they show up in the watershed with between 15 to 70% body fat. And they need that body fat to make their trip up the river to get to their spawning beds. Last year, Department of Fisheries in British Columbia released a report. On average, the body fat of sockeye and chinooks and coho was between 5 and 7 pounds of body fat, average, between the three species that are running our rivers. So in other words, a lot of fish did not make it up the river last year, which, of course, will break the chain. So that's what we're dealing with, and the reason that's happening is because we're seeing food disappear in the Pacific Ocean. If we're not careful, Ron, and you know people don't talk about it, but we should all. This is one of the biggest things that we should all be focusing on right now is the health of the ocean. Because if we kill the ocean, which you know I'm not saying we're killing it, but I'm looking at all these reports going, well, you know that's not good. This is not good. That's not good. Then I look at the effects on farming fish on the West Coast and what that's doing to our salmon. It's almost like they're purposely destroying the salmon stock. But in the same mouthful, it's all coming from Fukushima, my friend. And that's just one series. You know how much nuclear waste they've got stored off on the land in Fukushima? In containers. They built these containers. They put the most highly toxic radioactive material in the world in these containers. And the containers have a 5-year shelf life. Wait a second. Hold on, guys. What happens after 5 years? Well, now they're already leaking. They're all leaking. Yeah, they are, Ron. But you know what? It's so hard to get information out about Fukushima that the government's got a complete quash on it. That if you report stuff the government doesn't want other people to hear and they find out about it, you can go to jail in Japan right now. That's the kind of censorship they're putting on Fukushima. It hasn't gone away. It hasn't even started. The problems we're going to see with that series of reactors are going to continue and continue and continue. They're not going away. They have no answers for it. And that's just one series. Now, if we have the same event happen on the West Coast here, Ron, what kind of future are we looking at, guys? So I think it's really important that we educate our youth because they could scream loud enough that we could – there is other ways to generate power, folks. We do not need – nuclear power. We do not need it, period. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's crazy. I saw a report about Fukushima and what really happened there. I saw this report yesterday, and I still have – there's three other reports that I have to follow up on besides that, and then I'll probably talk more about this. But the Rothschilds, the elites of this world, are involved with Fukushima. Yeah.
You know, I just looked at the clock here, guys. It's 1:54. I can't believe that. I thought it was like still 1:30.
Yeah.
We only got about 3 minutes left here, Ron. I hate to cut you off, but we only got about 3 minutes left, and I have to let you go for till the next time. But, yeah, you want to share real quick with a last thought with people and Dave a last thought. And, unfortunately, gentlemen, I'm going to have to let you go.
Dave, go ahead.
I got to tell you. It's a real interesting world we live in when we have so many people that trust what the government's telling us that don't bother to look into it for themselves. And I'll tell you, the ones that do, we should be scared, but we shouldn't be so terrified that we're not going to try to do something for the good of mankind. We need to make people aware of what's really going on. Yeah. And all we can do is use our voices and whatever means we can, because we already know through social media we are censored heavily because they don't want this information to get out. And that's the governments that control social media. That's them telling, hey, look, we don't want this information out. Quash it when it comes out. And it's not just earthquakes and volcanoes. And well, realistically, stuff like Fukushima, it's other things. People need to be aware and they wake up to the realization that we have an opportunity right now to make a difference. And we have to do what we can to make that difference, regardless of the cost.
It's absolutely right. We have to make a difference. We don't have a choice. We don't have a choice. And I've said this time and time again. We don't have a choice. We have to get in here and do it now. We've got all these earthquakes happening, okay? And one thing after another. I said earlier last week, we're at my sixth day of a 10-day forecast. I'm forecasting a large earthquake to hit the United States West Coast and Canada. I'm not leaving Canada. Somewhere along the Canadian and the United States West Coast, we're going to have at least a 5.0, and I'm looking actually at an 8.0 earthquake.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a good heads up, Ron.
Everybody needs to look out, and it's going to happen on the West Coast. I think it's going to happen over in the Cascadia subduction zone. So everybody needs to pay attention. Get prepared.
I agree.
Get your preparedness plans, get your kits, get your water, get everything ready. It's going to be a big day.
It's better to have it and need it than to not have it and need it. So thanks for coming in today, Ron, and sharing some of your information about these areas that we should all be paying attention to. Thanks, Dave, for coming and adding a few comments. I'll have to let you guys go, but I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. God bless you guys.
Thank you. See you later. Family.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye, guys. Okay, this is...
Okay. Oh, okay, I'm going to use the bathroom, Steve.
needs to. Just do what you want to lose. And you'd have done to you. Father, forgive them. For they know not what they do. Father, forgive them. I don't know the same to you. Please don't forsake me. For you I do all.
Welcome back, second hour, folks, and I don't know what happened to my second hour guest. She talked to me about this show three times this week, knew the time, and unfortunately she is pulling a no-show on me, which really kind of throws me for a loop. But anyways, on short notice, I was sitting there thinking, who could I call on short notice that I haven't got on the air, but I've wanted to get on the air? And I have a friend here, and actually he's living in Prince Rupert, and his name's Merv Ritchie, and I'm going to let Merv tell you a little bit about himself, and then we're going to get into a conversation about the general going ons in Canada. Thanks for coming in, sir, on short notice, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure, and thanks for thinking of me, too, because you're right. We talked lots about me coming on your show and we haven't. So who am I? My name is Merv Ritchie. I'm 63 years old. Born in Saskatchewan, moved to BC when I was 15 and lived in British Columbia pretty much my entire life. Lots of trade skills and experience gathered over those years. I set up a newsprint press in Terrace in 2006 and became the editor and publisher of a few different newspapers in the local area. The Terrace Daily Online was the first news website in the northwest of BC. And we basically took over the audience, and we had an international audience for about 12 years. Printed newspapers, the Regional Report, the Terrace Daily. We did a comic, the comics used to come in newspapers. Well, we did a special edition for that called Funnies Extra. And covered all the topics, international, national, provincial, and the local. Particularly, we focused on the Indigenous issues in the Northwest. We were the lead for covering the Northern Gateway Pipeline. We've been covering the Coastal GasLink Pipeline and all the concerns there. Recently, the topics of interest, of course, have been, this authoritarian march across the Western democracies, and I've predicted that and wrote about it back in 2010, and following those issues all the way through. But I started one of the first class action lawsuits in BC for 170 property owners in the Shuswap region, and was successful in that. Ran for politics, ran for MLA, mayor, MP. Been in politics all my life. I actually had supper with John Diefenbaker with my parents way back in 1964. So wow. Even later than that, it would have been 68, probably, or 9. Yeah. So, it's been a very full life of experience. I'm not the type of guy that listens to music all day. I'm the type of guy that listens to talk radio and reads.
Well, I know you're very, very active, Merv. I've been talking to you and following you for years, and some of the stuff that you've been doing and some of your political campaigns. I used to post in your newspaper, your online newspaper, there years ago. It's too bad it went away, because it was a really good place to post and see information. You kind of had it all in one place there. And why did you quit that publication or that station again? What was the reason for that?
I was the only publication that did any real investigative journalism. I interviewed everybody, I investigated everything, and so I was exposing things that were very uncomfortable for a lot of people. The Chamber of Commerce didn't like me because I exposed some of their corruption, and the province, I was targeted by the province pretty heavily. I caused a lot of damage for the Department of National Defense. They had to go into 48 hours of damage control there after I exposed one of their operations up here. But the one that really got, there's lots of ways people trying to cut off my advertising revenue, because that's how a publication survives. A publication survives by your advertisers. If you don't get advertisers, you've got nothing. And I like to say, you get the news worth what you pay for it. And the only people that are paying for news are the pharmaceutical industries, governments, petroleum companies, those kinds of things, industrials. We don't pay for our news. They do. So that's the news you get. It's worth nothing, generally. But anyways, what really got me was during the inauguration or the selection of the new Pope. And that would have been 2013, probably.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
Yeah. And yeah, they, I wrote an article saying we will never have a new pope. Because I'm a news hawk, I listen to everything. Al Jazeera, Russia, France, I listen to news from all over the world. And the only news I could get, bar none, was about the selection of our new pope. And I think, the pope is, he belongs, he's the lead head of the Catholic Church. And we don't, when Scientology picks a new leader, we don't go, we're selecting our new leader. So I wrote a pretty scathing article on the history of the Catholics, Catholicism, I guess,
Yeah.
And it was a short article, but it got the most comments, and I got into it. Well, the Knights of Columbus went and ordered every one of my advertisers to
stop supporting you. Yeah.
Yeah. That,
imagine that.
The airlines, the car dealerships, they even went to the local hemp store, right? They went to everybody. And I lost $10,000 of a month advertising virtually overnight. And then I got an eviction notice for my home. That's the power the Knights of Columbus and the Catholic Church has. If you dare. So I discovered that quite personally.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways, you got to see what the inside's all about, Merv, and a pretty scary place, man, when the power that these people yield in our society, the history of the Catholic Church, man. If people think there's anything good there, then they really should look into who took over the Catholic Church and when it happened and blah, 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 and what their symbolism actually stands for. Be an interesting article, and it probably did ruffle some feathers, but you probably called it just like it is. And I like that. When you were doing that online thing, I was surfing that all the time, Merv, and there was all kinds of information there. And it's really too bad that it got shut down, that they put that kind of pressure on you. But that's just normal for our society today, isn't it?
Well, it's like peer pressure.
Getting that way.
You know, and like we talked about the masks. People just go along with it because, you know, if you don't go along with it, you're being ostracized. So people don't want to be ostracized, so they go along with things.
Yep.
You know, they don't. We don't teach people independence of spirit.
We teach them compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, right from the time they're born.
Right from grade school. You know.
Yep.
It's kind of tragic what we do to our children.
Well, anybody that's smart, Merv, doesn't have their children anymore. And you know what? Some of the greatest children I've met lately are children that are being homeschooled. So that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Oh, I will back you up 100% in that. I'll never forget my brother's brother-in-law. His kid came over into North Vancouver. They lived in Madeira Park up in the Sunshine Coast. And they'd been homeschooled. And these two young girls, they couldn't have been 10 and 12 when they came to the door. And, you know, they were asking, you know, whatever, you know, introducing themselves. And I was talking to mature, confident adults. And these were just children. And I was intimidated because they were so strong of character. You know, and so I 100% every child I've met that's been homeschooled virtually without exception. There's of course there's some, but really confident children.
Well, it's really, Merv, if you look at the whole school system, and, you know, that's a subject we could talk about for an hour by itself, but what they've done in the school systems and what we're turning out now is just indoctrinated little robots that are good subservient servants to the state. In a nutshell, that's exactly what they're doing with our children through the core programs, through SOGI 123, with the new programs you're instituting, what's the word I'm looking for right now? Merv, I lost the word I was looking for, but general indoctrination in our schools has been going on for years, and now we're starting to see the effects.
Have you heard of the After School Satan Club?
The After School what?
Satan Club.
I heard about that. I heard about that in the United States of America. Isn't that cool? So what do we do after school? We get together and serve Satan? Wake up, folks. Hang on. What are we missing here, Merv?
It's pretty bizarre the what? Age we're living in, isn't it?
Well,
the Chinese say maybe it's been interesting times.
Interesting times, Merv. You're about the same age as I am. I think I'm 67 now. I think you're around that age.
Yeah, you got 4 years on me. I'm 63.
Well, okay. But anyways, you still grew up in that era when things were really, really different than they are today. I look back at the way society was when I was even 10, 12, 13, 14 years old. It's completely flipped upside down. since I was a child. What I see now, it just astounds me what's going on. But it's been going on for a long time, and it's been a little piece here and a little piece there to get us where we are right now. And as a society right now, we're in a lot of trouble, man. And that you can see in our school systems and what they're doing with our kids. It's a tragedy. It really is.
Yeah, it's been a long process of, you know, we had
indoctrination.
If you look back in history,
conditioning,
you don't have to go too far back. In Britain in the 1800s was just a crappy place to live. People were trying to escape. They'd get into the holds of ships to come over to the New World, into the, you know, the holds where all the sewer was, and, you know, just to get away, to come to this New World, because the authoritarian and you know, the forced labor, basically slavery, was atrocious. And we didn't get out of that and have actually liberty and, you know, better working conditions, you know, all these benefits, not till the 50s. You know, really, you know, the unions fought and, you know, people were killed and, you know, standing up for workers' rights back in the early part of the 19th century. You know, they're massacred.
Right.
But we got human rights and dignity somewhere in the 50s. And it moved through till about the 70s. And then it started to, now it's all been taken away piece by piece by piece. And so we had, you know, only 20, 30 years of decent human society. And then it's just all got taken away again. And now we're in this, you know, oppressive situation. And the worst part is, of course, our compatriots, our friends and neighbors are going along with it.
It's almost like they're oblivious to it. You know, the changes that we've seen just in the last 2 years, Merv, in our society, and the effects of what's gone on in our society in the last 2 years, why can't people understand what's going on around them? Yet every day I see people that are just almost like they're brain dead. They just don't want to know, or they don't want to accept the fact that our government is out to destroy them. And it is, and it's doing it really quick. Actually, I'm kind of disgusted with Canadians, Merv. I am, in a lot of ways. I mean, we're our country is we have a great thing here in this country, be it whatever it is. I mean, we have a great country, and it is being absolutely destroyed right now. And if this goes on for another 2 years with the Liberal NDP coalition, I don't even want to think of what's going to look like here in a couple of years from now. Go ahead.
Well, I blame it on the media. We used to have independent media. We used to have different people own different medias. Mine was really new in the sense that I started it late in the game. But in the 60s, and 70s, 80s, we had good competing media that were independent, and they did their own investigative journalism, and they produced stories, and people learned. Like when you get out of school, after learning everything you do from grade 1 to grade 12, where do you get your knowledge? You get it from listening to the news at night or whatever program happens to come on. New discoveries, whether it be planets or biological things, we learn everything. Now, then really they've committed treason. But that's what it is. They have not been honest, providing any context or anything. They say things that are blatantly false. And so how can you blame your compatriots, our citizens, our friends and neighbors? You can't blame them because they're just getting that information from what they believe to be an honest, reliable source. And because it isn't honest and reliable, our media, all of them, have been committing treason because they've been poisoning the minds of the citizens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I would say to that is, sure, a lot of people turn on CBC and CTV every night, and that's what they believe is actually going on in the world. But it doesn't take any effort at all to go look at some opposing information that will get you asking questions right away. And I say to people that they have to. You have to be able to go look at opposing information. You're not getting it on mainstream. It's completely biased, completely controlled by our government. We can talk about anywhere that media is in the world today, and we see the same thing going on, Merv. It's controlled by the corporate elites, and you're never going to get this other side of the story. I just say to people that it's your responsibility to go look for other information contrary to what you're being fed on the Blue Tube every night, period. Because it's out there and it's not hard to find. It isn't hard to find at all. But there's so much negative. Well, you know what I'm seeing now, Merv? I don't want to cut you off, but this is something I'm really noticing in my own community now, is that I have people out there talking loud, and a couple people I know personally are talking loud, very loud, to everybody they know about the effects they've experienced since they took the Jibby Jab. So all of a sudden now, that seems to be a conversation where people all know somebody that seems to be affected adversely by these jabs. And that is that's encouraging to see, because as a society, we have to talk amongst ourselves. We're not getting the information on the media. And once people see that, Merv, they start to ask themselves questions about what we hear every day on the radio. Go get your jab, get your children inoculated, do your part to keep your children safe. I hear this diarrhea on the radio and I want to climb through the wire and grab these people by the throat, man. I do, because you know, and I know, Merv, you've looked at the numbers. I've looked at the numbers, and this thing has no effect on children, none. But the mass, what we've done to their brains in the last couple of years, well, we could talk about that for an hour, couldn't we?
Yes. Yeah.
It's absolutely tragic, buddy.
You say it's not hard for people to find the information if they go look for it. And it wasn't, I think it was Churchill, but I'm not sure, that said, democracy, you know, yes, if we can keep it, it's hard work. Right, you have to work at it, and people don't. I don't even know if they teach political theory in school at all, you know, or politics, or you know, most. You know, I ran for politics. We talked that. I can't tell you how many times people have come up to me and asked me the difference between a premier and a prime minister. You know, they don't understand the very first basics. Most, I'm talking 50% of the population probably. They just don't understand politics at all. They don't know what the boundaries of their regional district is, you know, what representative is who. And the, you know, the, one of the problems, that they've made it difficult for everybody, too, because all the boundaries are different. The health authority boundaries are different from the regional district boundaries. The regional district boundaries are different from the constituency boundaries for the province. The ridings for the federal government are different from, you know, all the boundaries are completely different for the MP. You know, so, you know, all these different regions, you know, people don't even know who to talk to. It's purposefully done. Yeah, we can change your political structure, but boy, we have to make it so it's understandable, easy for people to understand. And right now, it's extremely difficult. People don't understand the way these bills are put forward, and lots of different things are included in it. Yeah, you want to pass that, but that includes this too. And so then they say you voted against this thing, you know, but it was, you know, people don't understand those things. And the orders in council that they did in British Columbia here, Gordon Campbell just basically closed the legislature and just whenever he wanted, nothing even had to be debated. He was a little dictator.
Well, we see the same thing happening in Canada right now, don't we, Murph?
It's absolutely.
At our federal levels, man, oh, man, oh, man.
Do you remember Jody Wilson-Raybould?
You know, yeah, of course.
She was the highest law officer in the land. She was the attorney general, and she was the minister of justice. So she held two of the most senior legal positions in the land. And she blew the whistle on the SNC-Lavalin scandal.
Yes,
where they, you know, they were trying to force her to accept this deferred prosecution agreement, and right. You know, she had recorded conversations too of all the pressure, and she got, you know, kicked out of her position and removed, blew the whistle, the highest law off. Now, if this person can be sanctioned for blowing that whistle, like, who's going to stand up now? Who has the power? Nobody. In Canada.
Well, how come nothing was done about that? How come nothing was done about that, Merv?
Because she
were the RCMP?
I believe it was, well, that's another, I can tell you what happened to the RCMP. But
yeah, her name's Brenda Leckie. Brenda Leckie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but before her, it was way before her, you know, That goes back to Mulroney's era, back to the 70s and 80s. But Kathy, in the Prime Minister's office, was telling Jody Wilson-Raybould that she went along with this deferred prosecution agreement the way they wanted. They had all the media commentators to write stories in support of why she took the decision she did. Well, when she didn't take the right decision, we had nothing but commentaries lambasting Jody Wilson-Raybould. She was difficult to work with, and all these different stories came out to destroy her career. That's it. It's the media. It goes always back to that. You know, they have everybody bought. You know that, of course, the government's paying for the media now. Hundreds of millions of dollars to, you know.
That's your taxpayer dollar at work, man.
I could tell you what's going to be on the news, because I get it still in my email inbox from the government. They give me quotes from the different people. If it's an indigenous issue, there'll be a quote from a couple of chiefs. There'll be quotes from the Aboriginal Affairs Minister. There'll be a quote from the Premier. Now, I can put these quotes anywhere in the story I want. It's a cut-and-paste story. So I can tell you what's going to be on our local news pretty much every night because the government feeds it to them. Nobody does. You know, when I was I covered every city council meeting, every regional district meeting, every school board meeting for years and years in Terrace. And virtually no other media showed up at a regional district meeting. So, you know, the only stories they could publish is what they were pretty much told to publish. I covered them. Right. I live streamed them. And, so I had real stories. What people are reading now, and it's the words of propaganda, because they're just repeating what they're given. Very, very seldom do you get, unless it's a puppy dog story or, you know, someone's house burns down, they can get an actual story. But if it's anything political, anything of import, it's propaganda.
Of course it is. Yep. And, you know, anytime in society you take over the media, you take over that society. And what did Germany do in the Second World War? What did Hitler do prior to the Second World War? Well, he took over all the media in Germany. I think it was about 1935 he had control of it all. And, of course, all the people heard, of course, is what he wants them to hear. Well, we're seeing the same thing in Canada. The irony of it, Merv, is that we're paying to shoot ourselves in the foot. We're funding CBC. To shoot us. They're committing acts of treason on a daily basis. They do not give the Canadian public any real information, especially when it comes to the jibby jabs, because the information's out there right now. It's undeniable. It's coming out all over the world right now, information. The data they cannot hide. They cannot hide the data coming forward from the insurance companies, and that is a real thorn in their butt right now. Because they're telling us by their own data, and I read four reports on this week, Merv, that they have seen a 40% increase in death since the onslaught of the inoculations. 40%, and that's coming from the North America Insurance Agency's conglomerate database for all the insurance companies in North America. I went to four sites to make sure that this information is correct, folks, but what I'm telling you is correct. If that's the case, then where are all of a sudden all the new deaths coming from? Mervyn, why is that not being reported on CBC to the Canadian people? Or how about the Pfizer data dumps that came out a couple of weeks ago? How come that's not front page news? How come? It's absolute bullcrap. Like, what's shocking. Going on, man? Huh?
That was just talking, that data dump that they actually got out. But yeah, the media is not reporting on it. You're absolutely right.
Well, Merv, if people saw the Pfizer, everybody in Canada saw what actually came from Pfizer, the actual undeniable information about all the adverse effects that they're experiencing and seeing and the numbers they're seeing, nobody would be lined up to get another inoculation. It would blow it right out of the box. So what they're doing right now is criminal. And I just hope there comes a day soon that they get held to account, because they should be, because they're responsible for millions of deaths. And it's coming to that point. The numbers are absolutely astronomical, and I'm seeing them from all over the world right now. Really good sources of data, and it's absolutely blowing my mind what's going on. Go ahead.
Well, everyone's heard follow the money. And I tell you a story about following the money on the vaccine. You know, we can go back in time. You know, all our retirement funds are invested in mutual funds in the stock market. Almost everything that we do is in the stock market and mutual funds. And So you have to ensure, a fund manager has to ensure that the value increases. You can't lose your shirt because then everybody loses their retirement funds. In the mid-teens, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, all the big investment conferences were talking about people investing in vaccines because you were going to get a 20-to-1 return on your investment if you invested in vaccines. So that's what everybody did. In 2017-18, the nurses sued their health authorities in Ontario and BC to stop them from forcing them to take the annual flu shot. And so it went to an arbitration hearing in Ontario, and the judge hearing it, they had all the evidence, all the documents, everything. The judge ruled that the flu vaccines weren't even 25% effective, so it's just ridiculous to have to take them, and their cumulative impacts were shown to be bad. And they proved, and Dr. Bonnie Henry even was, that's our BC health officer here, she was even part of that, where they demonstrated that masks were completely ineffective. They stopped nothing. This right. was a court-approved arbitration ruling, so the Ontario nurses won against their health authority, and the British Columbia nurses' health authority dropped. They just conceded. So now nobody had to take the vaccines anymore, and it was becoming public. The military, both in the United States and Canada, were coming up with evidence that the vaccines for the flu shot were causing cumulative impacts on their soldiers. And so this was all going to fall apart, and people were going to lose their shirt. Now, can you imagine if all your grandmothers and grandparents' investments in their retirement funds collapsed and they had no money? Nobody would like that. And nobody would, you know, the big investment, they weren't going to lose their shirts, and everything's invested in vaccines. So they needed this. And when this thing happened, because you probably know the story all the way back to 2020, when they were working on these coronaviruses. We had the H1N1, you know, all these different things. They were almost trial things. But when this thing happened, whether it came from Wuhan or not, that doesn't matter. When they were able to use the fear of this new flu, you know, to freak everybody out and get these vaccines. And now they're flush with money. So guess what, folks? All your retirement funds are safe right now. To follow the money, that's what it all is. You know?
And if your neighbor dies, don't worry about it. But you're going to get your retirement fund. What a tangled web they weave, eh, Murph? Unbelievable. Well,
but they also, you know, it's kind of funny that they targeted all the old folks. You know, in Prince Rupert, where I live, we didn't have a single case of this coronavirus that came. You know, with nothing going on, and they came out with the vaccine January, I believe it was 21st. They arrived at the old folks' home,
right.
And within 7 days, people started dying, and almost, not quite, 50% of the residents of the manor, the Acropolis Manor, had died. You know, within 2 months. No,
I heard those numbers, but you never hear that on the radio, do you? You never hear the breakdown and actual numbers and who this is actually affecting. Where you never hear that information. Got to lock up healthy people and make us isolate and put a mask on and stick this poison in your body. 99.8 or 9.7% of us are never affected by it. But now we're mandated by the government to do this or you're going to lose your job. What does it take for people to see what the hell's going on here? Like the boot of medical tyranny is on our throat, Merv, and it's so obvious what they're doing. And yet people just go along. I don't know what to say anymore, man. I really don't, Merv. I bang my head against the wall. I'm getting a headache. I'm not kidding you. I do. I, you know, I, you could. It's like, you know, I
I challenge people. I put factual information in front of them, and I just ask them to go break down this information for themselves and tell me what you think, because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. All you have to do is go look at the data, and the data they cannot hide. What I talked about, the insurance companies, that data is coming out. It is absolutely blowing their story right out of the box. The same thing with obituaries, man. There's groups that are following obituary columns in the United States of America. This is what they do every day, Merv, and they're seeing about the same amount of numbers and increase in deaths across the board in the United States of America since the onslaught of this jibby jab. And this is all being hid from the public by the media. Really, someday these people have to be taken out and dealt with, Murph. They do. Because I don't know how much longer they're going to get away with this, but I think the dam is about to burst, my friend. I really do. I hope so. Well, but I think it's going to give.
But it's going to take some sort of new medium. You know, we have to, you know, the internet's controlled pretty heavily now, and Trudeau just passed that law that he can monitor, like China, what we're allowed to see in Canada.
Yep. You know? Isn't that great?
So, you know, are we going to go back to minstrel in between the streets playing songs and guitars or whatever to tell people what the real news is? You know, because you can't count on our telephones that we use now to get our news to provide us any news, because it's all going to be controlled. You know, it's very, very, very strange. But you're right. When we attended the Chris Sky meeting there in Terrace, everybody rose their hand when asked, does anybody know anybody that's been impacted by the shock? But before Andy asked, did you know anybody that's been impacted by this coronavirus, COVID, they call it, right?
Yeah. I think one or two hands went up in that crowd.
The hand came down when he re-asked the question. No, I mean from COVID, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it was from the top, right? And, it's, the other thing that bugs me, you know, everybody calls this COVID. Well, the WHO announced that trade name in January of 2020. It was the middle of January when they held a new conference, what they were going to call this new novel coronavirus. That's what it was before. It was novel corona. It's this new corona. And corona has been around forever. It's the flu bug. It's a cold bug.
Yeah.
You know,
we've got immunity.
And so there's a new variant out of this thing, and then they gave it a trade name. You know, so that was that variant, and they called it COVID-19 for 2019. And so now it's mutated. It's, you know, it's just another variant of this same corona that's going around. And then they give it new names, but people still continue to refer to it as COVID when it's not that, you know, it's not that at all. And
well, it went to the Delta and then it went to the Omicron, so it's not COVID anymore. It's mutated, but yeah, the media is still using the same language.
Yeah, but that's a trade name. That's a marketing name. If you want, it's marketing. So the marketing works. But that's what it is. It's marketing. And it's marketing for a good reason, for their good reason. You know, it's nefarious as all get out, you know, but
yeah,
that's what it is. It's marketing, and people have bought into it.
So you got to ask yourself, Merv, what kind of people we're really dealing with in our world when they know, they have absolutely no doubt in my mind, they know exactly what this is going to do to people. And yet they're just pushing forward with this. These are, how else can you describe these people as very, very evil? Because they know they're hurting people, especially children. To push out this rollout of vaccines for children, there's nothing that bothers me more than that right now, my friend. What we're doing to innocent children, sticking this stuff in their arm, and they're never, ever going to be affected by this thing. But what are the adverse effects of these shots? Well, you know, the Canadian adverse, the Veracyte, of course, has got good data. I don't trust their data. I believe it's really underreported. But also now the Canadian adverse effects reporting site, if you go there and start looking at some of the data, and the list of side effects that they list, Merv, is astronomical. This is their own data now, right from that reporting site. All people have to do is go look at it and go, well, wait a second, hold on. All these adverse effects are coming from this jab. How many people is it actually affecting? How many people are actually being saved by it?
Well, they've come up and told us it doesn't stop you from getting it. It doesn't stop you from spreading it. All it does is make your symptoms a little bit more bearable if you get this called so-called COVID-19, the global pandemic. Remember that word the first day they talked about it, Merv? It's a global pandemic, folks. Everybody ran to their houses and hid under the couches. Just leave us alone with our color TVs. It was really funny to watch.
That's a good point, because if people remember back at the beginning of 2020, the streets of Vancouver, I was down in Vancouver at the time, and the streets were deserted. Everybody came home from their holidays, wherever they were. They came back to their home countries. They were all locked in their homes. You couldn't go shopping. You couldn't do, you know, you couldn't go to work. People, and what they did, because you couldn't have people over, the only means of communication was their television and the radio, and listening to the broadcast of what's going on. And they had months to freak everybody out completely.
What did they ever? The fear virus, Murph. The fear virus. How effective is it? Trudeau came out and said, first time he talked about this on TV, he said, this is going to kill, and this was his words exactly, between 50,000 and 350,000 Canadians minimum are going to die. That's why we're enacting these emergency measures right now. We're going to stem the tide, stop the curve, is his words. It's going to last 2 or 3 weeks, folks, and we'll be back to normal. And those were his words. And he scared the Canadian people so badly. I was walking around the day after this started, and people are like standing away from me from 6 feet. I'm going, like, what is wrong with you guys? All of a sudden, we're now contagious. It's laughable, but it's not, Merv. It just, they know how people are going to react now. This is kind of like a test run. And if people think for 1 minute that this has gone away now, that they've lifted mandates and the mask mandates are gone and blah, 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 we've got a victory, boy, you better shake their heads, because this is going to come back three times as hard and three times as fast as it did in the beginning. They're going to come forward with a variant. They're going to come out on TV and go, hey, a new one's come out, guys. It's five times as dangerous as the next or the last one. Oh, but wait a second. Hold on. We've got a new vaccine, and we're going to have it on the market in 3 weeks for you. Isn't that great?
Isn't that something? Huh?
We're gonna test it for 3 weeks, and we're going to let you guys have it. What are they talking about, a fourth booster now, Merv? Are you guys serious?
Yeah, that's right. Is it more than that? I mean, what are we in, the sixth or eighth wave, they call it, or something? Yeah, and
I think the sixth wave is what they're talking about now.
It's getting ready. I'm kind of getting tired of listening to all the rhetoric, and so I haven't been paying attention to the news podcast as much. I used to always listen to the headline news first thing in the morning. At 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, I'd listen to all the headline news to see what they were going to try and feed everybody. But I've kind of stopped doing that because I'm pretty sick and tired of it all, because it's gotten a bit ridiculous. But, you know, when they talk about the boosters, and you mentioned that, they did this the first vaccine trials, and they got them approved. Okay, so the boosters are nothing more than just more of the same vaccine, the same shot. It's not a redesigned one, or else it'd have to go through more approvals.
Right.
So they're giving a booster for exactly the same variant. You know, I mean, they didn't even, I don't think it is what anybody thinks it is, this shot they're giving people. But it's not modified. It can't be modified. You have to go through more trials. Right? So they're giving people just a booster of exactly the same thing for a variant, if there's new variants of the change. So,
makes perfect sense to me, Merv.
this is the act of reasoning. This is the reasoning ability that we have not been teaching our children in school. Where's your capacity for critical thinking? Right?
It's frowned on. Going to look. It's discouraged. I know. It's sad, Merv. It really is. It is. You know what? I'm going to have to let you go here in a couple of minutes, Merv. Thanks. You know, I'm going to thank you for coming in and talking with me. We're going to definitely have to do this again, because I've actually really enjoyed this last 40 minutes that we've had a chance to talk. You've got great information. Already, and, well, yeah, our time's almost up here, but I'm going to definitely get you back in again, my friend.
The only thing I want to say is we have We have to deal with the media. We have to deal with the media, because this will continue on until we deal with the media. If there's going to be protests and gatherings or anything, it's in front of CBC, CTV, BC, Global. We target the source of the problem, and that's the media.
Yeah, take it to the president's house. Take it to the CEO's house. Stand in front of their driveway and let them know what you think about all the lying that's being done to the Canadian people, how important it is that they tell the truth, because they aren't, Merv. And they are the biggest enemy of our country, bar none. I got to thank you again, Bud, for coming in. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll do it again for sure, Mark. We'll do it again. Thanks for coming in, my friend. Okay, bye for now. Okay, guys, I'll be back in hopefully in about 4 or 5 minutes with Dr. Roger Hodgson. Hang around. He said he'd be ready. Welcome back to Third Hour, folks, and thanks, Murr, for coming in on short notice. Really enjoyed that conversation with him, and I'm going to get him back on real soon. I think he deserves some time on the air to share some of his thoughts. It's an honor and a privilege to have Dr. Roger Hodgson in for the Third Hour. Anybody that's listened to my shows over the last couple of years has heard the doctor talk. I think I've had him on 3 times now in the past. Always a good conversation. I've been looking forward to this. Welcome back to the show, Doctor.
It's a pleasure to be chatting with you again. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I followed you in Ottawa, and I listened to all the meetings and all the talks. First off, what are your thoughts about how the government treated the people in Ottawa, Doc? Was that one of the most disgusting things you've ever seen in your life, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was disgusting, and it was not. It's a matter of which way you look at it. The reaction was totally disgusting, of course, not even the opportunity for a conversation let alone the Prime Minister, but one of his minions. We didn't have a conversation with anyone. There was an opportunity to do that, of course, at the press conference that was put on, where we were hoping that people from Health Canada would participate in a discussion with the experts that we put up. They didn't show for that. That was, of course, part of the intent. We didn't expect them to. They always like to control the narrative, and they had no real information, of course, to back up their decisions. So their absence spoke volumes. But the positive side of them not meeting is this. The initial demands of the truckers, of course, was very simple. We just don't want to be vaccinated to cross the border. If, in fact, the Prime Minister had agreed to that, which would have been the obvious thing to do, then the truckers would have not morphed beyond the idea of the vaccination to cross the border into the more general concerns about the loss of freedoms. So to a certain extent, the failure to discuss, negotiate, or whatever was the reason that this became a national and now international movement. So to a certain extent, we have to thank the ex-drama teacher for creating conditions that made it much more significant. We needed something to react to. And he created the perfect storm for us to react to. So we have to thank him for that, for being so bloody stupid. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had myself muted there, Doc. I'm sorry about that. I do that because I have a tendency to make a little bit of background noise. You know what? I got to say, there's nobody I love more right now than Justin Trudeau, because he has done more to unify this country in the last couple of months than any individual individually. Every time he opens his mouth, he sticks his foot in it. And even his colored socks right now aren't stopping people from seeing what this man truly is all about. He is one of the worst people that Canada's ever had to deal with. And he really showed his true colors, the way he dealt with the peaceful protesters, very, very peaceful protesters in Ottawa. Go ahead.
Totally. I mean, I was there for 2.5 weeks. All I saw was tremendous patriotism, more flags than Ottawa has ever seen. Probably more crowd, a bigger crowd than Ottawa has ever seen, short of the returning troops from the Second World War. Mm-hmm. It was very peaceful. There were lots of families there, children, no violence whatsoever. They simply stood their ground until they were threatened with having the windows smashed and their trucks hauled away. No attempt at even hearing their concerns.
Yeah, and there was lots of that going on. Doc, what a disgusting situation. And then you have the Prime Minister invoke the Emergencies Act on peaceful protesters. I asked people when we had the blockades of the railway lines there last year, where it cost Canada, I don't know the exact figure, Doc, but I was reading a story about it, The exact dollar figure I can't say, but it was in the tens of billions of dollars in economy lost by our rail lines being illegally blocked, but nothing's done about it. What does the government do? They send a team to negotiate with them. They wouldn't even come out and talk to these people in Ottawa. They're supposed to be our representatives, Doc. What's happened to our country?
Absolutely. It was tyrannical. It's an example, of course, not an example, the biggest example of what happens when you surrender freedoms over a couple of decades, little by little, until it gives them an open field to act in this tyrannical way. But I do have to say, thank God for COVID and thank God for the truckers, because we now have something to react to that we didn't have before. It's hard to react to something that's called the loss of this freedom or that freedom. It gets a bit boring. But now it's the point of the spear that is now sticking at us, and we have to react. Because if we don't win this one, not the battle is won, obviously, but not the war. We have to win the war, because otherwise democracy is heading in a very dark space.
I can honestly say, Doc, that I'm in great fear right now for the future of my country. I'm not a fear-mongering type of person, but realistically, if the coalition that was just formed between the Liberals and NDP are allowed to go forward for the next 2.5 years, I believe the damage that they will inflict, these two individuals will inflict on this country, might get us to the point of no return. And I honestly didn't think I'd be able to say that in this point in my life, but I'm in fear right now, because they have basically a coup. They can basically do anything they want to our country, and we have no recourse. One thing in our system that is so wrong that our politicians now can basically, between Jagmeet Singh and Trudeau, they can basically do whatever they want, and we have no way of stopping them. How do we fix that, my friend?
Well, that's true until the next election. We still have a thing called elections, thank God. We will have to wait until then. But until then, of course, it's a little bit like the states in a way. Napoleon had a wonderful phrase for this kind of situation. And he said, in common parlance, he said essentially, never stop your enemy from screwing up. So we're going to have a much bigger target to attack in the next election, just as they will in the States. And that will be a remarkable moment, because in my opinion, over the next little while, the autopsy, as I call it, of what's happened over the last 2-3 years, the autopsy will be written in lay language for everyone to clearly understand the scale of what's happened, the lies, the propaganda, the consequences, both personal and from a societal perspective. When that starts sinking in to the majority of people who are not stupid, they're just being kept ignorant.
Right.
Once that starts sinking in, I think we're setting the stage for a new political era that we're not prepared for. An era based upon traditional values, family, religion, safety, those securing our borders, only admitting who we want, which is, of course, how it used to be. So I'm actually, in the medium term, I'm relatively optimistic. I think it's going to be a rough road until then. The biggest thing to get rid of course, right now is, given the fact that the Emergency Measures Act was never enacted, largely because of the truckers, what we now have to still get rid of is the public health emergency. It never was. It certainly isn't now. And that is, of course, the underpinning of all the ridiculous antics that they get up to, none of which have any basis in medical science.
I still see people, even after the mask mandates are dropped in BC here, Doc, I still see people driving around in their cars with their masks on. And I just shake my head. I really do. It's almost like it's a cult now. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a measure of the scale of the indoctrination and the propaganda. And when those people realized that it was all for naught, that your mask did absolutely nothing, your children were basically slaughtered on the altar of these new gods. You know, child sacrifice is really what it amounted to really, you know, for the children to be so brutalized with masks for 2 years, a measurable drop in IQ, nonverbal communication not being, the consequences of that, of course, will be lifelong. Then they had the gall to suggest that they be vaccinated for no reason, despite all the risks. And it didn't even end there, because they'll be paying for the massive national debt for the rest of their lives, either by increased taxes or reduced services, which translates, of course, into a reduced standard of living for our children for the rest of their lives. The most brutalized sector of society were our children. But I think it's going to sink in how tyrannical it's been. You cannot stop the truth. The basement printing press will be starting at full bore. And it's programs like yours, of course, that really help to spread the message. And I very much for the ability to get the truth out there, otherwise known as inconvenient facts.
Yeah, the red pill, and you've got to swallow it, man. Most people are scared to swallow it. Most people just don't want to see what it seems like. You know, I'm supposed to be dealing with intelligent people in my society. And I can put information in front of these people, Doc, that, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, if what I'm telling you is true, then you don't think you'd want to go and look into it for yourself. Yet it seems like I'm dealing with people that don't even want to go look. They just want to go along to get along. And they don't realize where they're taking our country by doing that. Go ahead.
You see, we haven't really scratched the surface yet in my opinion, for the consequences of what has happened. We're aware of the VAERS data being massively underreported. It's probably more like 1,000 in the States as opposed to 12,000. Yep. We're aware of the fact that the deaths have been massively overreported to the extent that many people are now saying that there'll be approximately 2 lives lost for every life saved, given all these interventions over the last 2 years. We now start sinking in. People are going to be so revolted by what they've been subjected to that it will create a very fertile ground for the likes of Joe Bourgault, who has thrown his hat into the ring for leadership of the PC party, and also for here in Alberta. It's grist for the mill for the very rapidly growing desire to separate the Republic of Alberta. Mm-hmm. COVID is going to transform politics, and it will be for the good.
I'm going to try and share your optimism, but I'm a little bit pessimistic about the future right now, Doc, given what I see going on. I know that, you know, we're going to have elections in 2.5 years from now. My biggest concern is that, you know, I have two very, I'll call them exactly what I see them as being, two very evil men with absolute power over our country. What kind of legislation and documents and laws are they going to act in the next couple of years that might just really make us into a very, very ugly country? They're going full steam ahead right now. Our gas prices, I mean, I'm talking to some people. Gerald Celente just did a video on this, and he's telling us, and I follow a lot of the economic guys that are talking right now, and he's telling us by June, July, we could be seeing $3 a liter for fuel. How that's going to transform into society, what that's going to do to all our prices, people have no idea, Doc, but they're really it's almost ridiculous how fast they're ramping up the attack on the middle class in Canada.
No, I couldn't agree. It's certainly not the country I joined in 1970. It's transformed.
Well, it's sure changed, hasn't it?
It's really now a totalitarian regime. That's the best way of describing it. The NDP and the Liberals, of course, will ride roughshod over the oil and gas industry. It was very interesting to hear just yesterday or the day before that despite the antagonistic approach towards oil and gas and coal in Western Canada, they approved a very important offshore oil drilling off, I believe, Newfoundland, you know, a major investment. I'd like to know the difference between drilling for oil off Newfoundland with all the risks of offshore drilling, opposed to putting oil through a pipeline from Alberta.
It's a Chinese company. That's why.
It couldn't be more, yes, exactly. It couldn't be more clear. It couldn't be more clear, could it?
That the rest, could be more clear.
The West is massively attacked. And the worse that is, the better it is, because we got to get through to people just how grotesque the reaction is, in the hope of a major regime change in the next election.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see some form of constitutional reform in Canada where we have a system in place that if we run into the situation in the future, Doc, where we elect individuals to supposedly work on our behalf and our best interest, and yet we see with these governing bodies right now the exact opposite. Everything they're doing is detrimental to the future of Canada. We want to talk about the $500 billion that Trudeau has printed out of thin air in the last couple of years, of the effects that's having on our economy and inflation. Now our numbers are going right through the roof and they're only increasing. And as far as the offshore drilling they allowed, well, why are we importing Saudi oil, which is the dirtiest oil in the world, and supporting a nation that is terrorist to the core, and we have more oil in the ground in Canada than we'll ever use? Why is that going on, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, it defies logic, but of course we're not dealing with a logical person, are we?
No.
Sooner he returns to, you know, being a part-time drama teacher, the better. And we have someone with a few neurons between the ears to actually run the country as a business. I'm a Trumper. I make no mistake. I admire the man deeply, but he was wrong on everything to do with COVID. And perhaps one of the biggest risks for democracy is what's going to happen in 24 with Trump. Because if he's not careful, he could lose the second election because of COVID. He lost the first, of course, because the Democrats brilliantly realized they could engineer absentee ballots that they knew they could milk on the basis of it being dangerous to go to the polling station. Correct. The next one he could lose because the Democrats could well lay all the consequences of the mandates and the vaccine at his feet because they were introduced on his watch.
Right. And it's all gone south on us and he's to blame, blah, blah, blah. We're the heroes. Here we are.
I think he needs to get ahead of the game to put his standard in the ground, run a program on television in which he's looking straight at the camera and he says, on day one, when I'm a president in 24, I'm going to fire Fauci. Day one. Because he lied to me. I'm a businessman. I did the vaccines to a hole in the ground. And everything that's happened as a consequence, I lay directly at his feet. He needs to say that now and get ahead of the game. Otherwise, he could be very vulnerable in 24.
I agree. How come Fauci isn't in jail? I mean, it's been openly admitted and recognized that he lied to Congress under oath. So how can that man still be walking? Why is that going on, Doc? Who's pulling the strings there, I wonder? Go ahead.
Why isn't Clinton in jail? I mean, it could go on and on, couldn't you?
Yeah,
I mean,
you could go on for a long time, couldn't you?
The FDA, the CDC, they're all totally corrupt organizations. But, of course, if if the Republicans take control of the House in November, it could be a very different story. There could be a grand jury investigating Fauci.
Everything I'm seeing so far down the states indicates that it's going to be a landslide for the Republicans in the House and the Senate in November, that Americans are absolutely infuriated at what Joe Bob is doing to the country right now, especially with the border situation. That, to me, is just out of insane what's going on at the border. Go ahead.
Well, if you look globally, Ukraine obviously is a disaster, but in the grand scheme of things, so far as the West is concerned, Ukraine is a hiccup. What we really have to be concerned about is China. China, we are at undeclared war with China. They said so.
Yep.
It's like 1933 all over again. And we have to be incredibly concerned about how we react to China, how we buy things from China, how we buying goods from China simply makes them stronger. And there was a concept of medieval warfare, which is very applicable today. You don't feed your enemy. There should
be that to Canadian people, Doc. Go to the dollar store. What do you have? China.
That's right.
And people think it's great.
But and the death of the heartbeat in consequence, of course. But, we really have to come to grips with the fact that we are going to be at war with China. And on the one hand, we have two curves crossing. We have a curve going down that represents the death of democracy everywhere across the West. And that's, unless Trump gets in, we're entering very dangerous territory internationally. So that curve is going down with a senile, weak president who can't even blow his nose. On the other hand, we have a curve going up, which is the ascendancy of China. And they are going to be in charge when they pull the plug on that. We want to delay that as much as possible. Making them stronger simply gives them the choice of when. Remember how we beat the Russians? It was basically by outspending them, making it impossible for them to compete. The Russians had to decide, are we going to buy vodka and keep their masses happy, or are we going to build up our armed force? And they did peace and giving the masses vodka. Essentially, that's what happened.
Yep.
We need to consider this. If we could really affect living, there could be an internal revolt there. The educated elite in the cities, the ones that have got used to more of a Western standard of living, if that is denied them, it could be an internal revolution that might bring them to their knees.
It's hard to go to any store. You go into a Walmart now in Canada and go try and find stuff that's made in Canada. And you'll be very, very hard-pressed to go to any store now and find anything that's made in our country. That's been turned around in the last 30, 40 years, and we need to get back to that. We need to manufacture everything we need in Canada and tariff the Chinese people to death, because you're absolutely correct. They hate us. And there's an old saying, Doc, you don't need an army to defeat a country. And China's
that's
showing
right.
us that.
Right.
China's showing us
Trump, one of the other important lessons from COVID, of course, was that it made Trump realize, and the rest of the world, including me, I was unaware of the fact that 90% of our pharmaceuticals originate from China.
Yeah, they're manufacturing 90% of our pharmaceuticals now, and they're our enemy. Something's wrong with that picture, Doc.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense, does it, for our future enemy to be controlling our medical supplies? But Trump, of course, with realization of that, started the movement to bring industry back from China that had offshored simply because it could be produced more cheaply. Now, that was admirable. I fully expect that to continue when Trump becomes president in 2024, because without putting too fine a point on it, an economy is only as strong as the stuff that it's making. And by stuff, I mean things you can hold, things you can feel. Manufacturing. The strength of an economy cannot be based upon exotic banking and insurance and financial services. That's quicksand. That's not stuff you can hold.
Right.
We have to bring back manufacturing, and with that, of course, comes jobs, which we desperately need. So I think when Trump gets in, it's going to be a very interesting world. I just hope that in the meantime, the Chinese don't have a little trial run with Quemoy, the islands very close to the coast, as a testing ground for Biden's will to resist. And because if he doesn't resist the shelling of Quemoy, then Taiwan's fair game, and that could be a major conflict before Trump ever becomes president.
Yep. Also, one thing we don't want to see is Joe Bob removed for section, I think it's the 25th section of their constitution, removing the president due to a mental inability of him to continue as president. I believe they could enact that on any time because their own party is calling for that. And what's going to happen then? Who are we going to be dealing with? Kamala Harris, Doc? I mean, my God.
If the Republicans control Congress, I'm not an expert on how their constitution reads on, but I believe it's possible for Congress to impeach Biden and Harris for good reason. And I believe there's still then residual power in the Speaker of the House. And
well, there's actually four or five things they could impeach him for right now. Just what's going on at the border is an impeachable offense.
Absolutely. But I believe that if the president and the vice president are taken out of the picture, I believe there's, I may be wrong here, but I there was certainly talk that Trump might become speaker and basically direct traffic from there.
That'd be an interesting scenario.
You don't have to be the speaker of the House. You can be appointed.
What do you think about this pullback from the American dollar as the world's reserve currency? Doc, where do you think that's going?
Well, we certainly don't want it to be the yuan or whatever the Chinese currency is, do we? I thought it was a big mistake when we pulled back from the gold standard. It wasn't necessary, and it created great uncertainty for the future of the United States. The reason I'm concerned about the future of the United States is, quite apart from being intuitively more American than Canadian, is that they are our last hope for democracy.
They're the last cowboy.
If the states goes down, we all go down.
Exactly. They're the last cowboy in the way right now, Doc. Go ahead.
We simply can't allow that to happen. And that's why as I said earlier, the worse it gets, the better it gets. Because people need to be prodded into action instead of just this hedonistic swirl down the drain, as I call it, you know, with your Netflix, your water bottle, and your iPhone. And,
My color TV and my stainless steel tire, my steel dulcet radios. Leave me alone.
The politicians, of course, think that they are the ultimate savior of everyone. They can protect everyone from all underlined, all of life risks. Just trust us, you know?
there is, believe it or not, right now, and I was given privy to this information that there is some pretty high level meetings going on behind closed doors about the implementation of the Great Reset in Canada. I don't think we're too far away from them pulling us or try to pull us off, Doc. There's two reasons I say that. Number one is that they control the money, that when you control the currencies in the planet, you at any time can pull the plug. And if they did that, you would see chaos erupt in society. I believe that's in their playbook. I honestly do. Yeah. I think their backs are getting up against the wall now. They're being exposed on this scamdemic that they've brought into society. They're being exposed, and the data's coming out. So I think they're going to do something crazy. Go ahead.
Rather than... We've now got their number, the Great Reject, the Great Reset. We've got their number. And when people get more and more educated about the ultimate objective of, you know, you'll own nothing and but still be happy, it's going to transform into exactly the opposite, which I call the Great Reject. The Great Reject is going to be our salvation. When people become aware of the consequences of this consummate madness, when you hear those people talking, you just think you're in 1984, don't you? Nothing more than communism all dressed up in modern jargon.
It's the worst of communism and fascism mixed together, I think, Doc, is what we're seeing. It really is. We're in a communist right now. I believe we're in a communist dictatorship because, like, we basically in our system, we don't have a way of stopping anything they want to do. We don't have, and this is, I think, something that's really would be important for Canada going forward, is recall legislation where they have the ability to put a stop to governments that go rogue on us. And this government's definitely going rogue. Go ahead.
I totally agree. I think it's going to get so bad that the Republic of Alberta is almost an automatic result.
I'll be moving to Alberta.
The Republic of Alberta will be the most prosperous, freest, happiest place on earth with the lowest taxes of any Western democracy, because Alberta has everything it needs within its borders. And once a referendum is sufficiently, once the question is crafted appropriately to engineer a 51% result, it will be presented to Ottawa as, we're going to talk turkey now, and if we don't like what we're getting, we're declaring independence. Screw you. You've had a chance. You blew it. We are now the independent Republic of Alberta.
I can actually see those days coming real soon because the general consensus amongst Albertans are they're absolutely disgusted with what the government's doing. And in time, you know, radical times require radical movements. And I can actually see that being a real possibility going forward. I talk to a lot of people in Alberta, Doc, on a regular basis, and the sentiments are shared by a general population now, I believe, that they've had enough. And they see where this government's going, where the country's going, and they don't want no part of it. I don't blame them. I'd move to Alberta right now because I've had with this country. I mean, I'm so disgusted with this country right now. And I bang my head against the wall trying to get Canadians to realize the danger we're in, the real danger we're in. If we had the media doing what they're supposed to do in this country, for 24 hours, they got the information out to Canadians that they need to hear, this whole thing would collapse on them. That's our biggest enemy in this country, Doc.
It's going to be much easier when the scale of what's happened with COVID becomes more readily understood, and because along with that goes the recognition that we simply cannot trust government. The essence of the Great Reset is, of course, trust. Trust us. We know what's good for you lot. Trust us. You'll be much happier. That's all you have to do is just trust us. Well, trust has gone out of the window with COVID. Trust is now obsolete. That is a great starting point for a new politics. Trust, of course, has gone out of the window with medicine as well. Are you really, you know, if you remember seeing your doctor a month ago who lied to your face about the vaccination that was being planned, and then you go in to see your doctor a month from now with bellyache that could be cancer, and he says or she says to you, you know, we've investigated you and we really can't find anything. Are you going to trust that doctor's opinion in the future? I don't think so. A very sad day for medicine. Trust has gone out of the window everywhere.
It is, Doc, and the theory of informed consent seems to have gone right out the window, doesn't it? I mean, if people were made aware of the potential side effects, and they're not being made aware, then you'd see a stop to this. Go ahead.
How can you have informed consent if you're not informed? Physicians have been specifically prohibited from telling their patients the risks of vaccination.
Well, then I'd have to ask those physicians where their oath is gone.
Well, the first do no harm and informed consent are the two principal medical ethics. They've both gone out of the window.
Exactly.
To the extent that I'm now saying, just to get people's attention, government is your new doctor. Be worried. Be very worried.
Mm. Absolutely.
Now, being for doctors, what they can and cannot say. We've earned that trust over centuries, but we've lost it in the click of a finger.
Well, I can say, sir, I wish there was more of them out there like you right now, because we sure need it, but they're all being censored. And I'm hearing these reports everywhere. But then I look at the data that I'm seeing from the rest of the world. And, you know, they can't hide the bodies forever, Doc. And I believe this is really going to explode on them in the next little while. I honestly do. I listen to a lot of doctors talk, and I listen to them all the time. And if half of what I'm seeing and hearing is true, then you're going to see some numbers absolutely explode with these jibby jabs. Go ahead.
I'm calling that the big kill. The big kill. You know, over the last 2.5 years, there have been, until the Life Insurance of Indiana went public as the first life insurance company reporting a spike in deaths.
Yep.
Until those hard, stone cold facts were reported by a life insurance company, there were no, underlined in neon, no facts upon which to make decisions. There was only assumptions and guesses. When I did rallies with 500 people, I always ask this question: would everyone here please put up their hand if you're aware of someone in your immediate acquaintance who has suffered a heart attack, a stroke, or a pulmonary embolus, not just a headache and a sore arm, but something life-threatening? Could you please put up your hand? The first time I asked that question, I was totally unprepared for the response from the people listening. Approximately 25 to 30% of everyone there basically put up their hand. Mm. And I was amazed. So I asked the question repeatedly. Every time I did a rally, I'd ask the same question, and it was always the same percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that just was a straw poll, but it was the first indication of how much death and morbidity is being caused by these vaccines. And then we have the Life Insurance Company of Indiana corroborating that with stone-cold facts on which their business depends. And well, then life insurance companies coming out with the same, if not greater, numbers. A 40% increase in death.
Yep.
Of
those are numbers I saw, Doc.
Who were otherwise well and who did not die of COVID. That number could only be explained by one of three things: suicide, delayed access to treatment of existing medical problems, or new medical issues not being investigated, and of course, vaccines. Well, the spike was temporarily related to the vaccination program, and that is almost certainly the predominant reason for that spike in deaths. So that's why I'm calling it the big kill. We've not seen the end of it because of plausible reasons to be worried about the possibility of premature dementia, premature heart failure, the reemergence of cancer under control, increased incidence of new cancers, etc., etc., etc. Things, and fertility issues, of course, too. Things that may only play out in the next 10 years. Very plausible, lots of evidence for it scientifically. And the scale of that death, given that potential, should obviously be very, very thoroughly investigated before you introduced a brand new technology with all those risks to billions of people around the world, including pregnant women and including children. That's how indescribably offensive, despicable this period of time has been.
I couldn't add more. I could add all kinds of things to what you just said, Doctor, but you're absolutely spot on that this is genocide being perpetrated, murder being perpetrated on people under the guise of protecting you from something that's never going to affect you. It just goes to show you the power of the media and how they have brainwashed society to trust them. But the numbers, like you said, the insurance agency numbers of the American Association of Insurance Companies just released the same data that you just talked about, Doc, that across the board, the insurance companies in North America now, and this is a lot of them, are reporting approximately 40% increase in deaths. And it all has to be attributed to the change in Germany as well. Disturbing. That's unbelievable. What's it going to be next year, Doc? What's it going to be in a year from now if that's what we're seeing now? Let's take it a year down the road. What kind of numbers are we going to see? It's almost scary. Go ahead.
Well, as I said, that realization will feed into the late education of the people who have swallowed the Kool-Aid and now deeply regret it, because you cannot be unvaxxed. You cannot reconstitute an immune system that's been devastated to this degree. The immune suppression, in particular, is now becoming very obvious with an increased prevalence of infections and cancer.
Yeah.
Because remember, the immune system is not just there to fight infections. The immune system is there, generally speaking, to identify anything that's not you. Now, bugs are not you. That's why the immune system attacks infections. But cancer is not you. Cancer is not you. Very small cancers, we believe, are being killed very frequently before they ever reach the size that becomes clinically obvious and is creating what you people call cancer, a lump, something that is producing pain or an obvious clinical syndrome. The immune system, we believe, is constantly getting rid of, very effectively, with 100% efficiency, very small cancers that would otherwise grow into significant cancers. Once that immune surveillance and efficiency of the immune system is damaged, then watch out. Watch out for increased infections and increased cancer. And, of course, yep. Ryan Cole in Idaho was the pathologist who first blew the whistle on that.
I'm seeing those reports, numbers in cancer skyrocketing. And I'm seeing information from around the world that's telling me that cancer is skyrocketing, Doc. Well, we've got a vaccine-induced immune deficiency syndrome. That's the new catchphrase. But reports I've read, maybe you'll collaborate or talk about this for a second, but, you know, after you've received two jabs and a booster, you have approximately 25% left of your original immunity in your body. Those are the numbers I'm seeing. Have you seen numbers like that or similar, that it depletes it much after three shots?
Yes, that number is being widely discussed. Pardon me, I'm not trying to be facetious here. But that's a point on a curve that is dropping. We don't know where it's going to end up.
Right.
We do know that as of now, given the period of time that we've been vaccinated, we do know that there has been a very worrying drop in the capacity of the immune system to function normally. But that graph is still dropping, and we don't know where it's going to end up.
Well, let me ask you a question. If it gets to a point where we have 10% left of the original immunity that we had in our body, how many people are going to die from common infections, Doc, that your body can't fight anymore? Yeah. This is genocide, is it not? This is craziness.
Well, only genocide insofar as ignorant application of policies that had could have predictable outcomes. I'm certainly not of the opinion that this was an intentional genocide along the Gates depopulation scenario, exactly, for example. I do not believe that that was an intentional release of a bioweapon from Wuhan. What I do believe is that that release created what you might say an unexpected opportunity that fell not just into the laps of the Democrats in the States, but fell into the laps of the great resetters who were ready and able to exploit it as much as possible. Doesn't mean to say that they engineered it, but what they did was capture the opportunity and milk it to the hilt, if I can mix my metaphors. But not genocide in terms of an intentional killing of society. But the scale of death, the big kill, as I call it, the scale is still to be revealed. And I like to put some shock words on it to better describe the scale of what's going on. And I'm now calling it, and I make no excuse for the words here, I'm calling it the rape of our soul. The rape of our soul. It's so gross what's happening to society, not just with COVID, but the loss of freedoms. It's so gross that it does represent a rape of our soul. It's tragic, while at the same time creating an opportunity of the same scale. I'm calling that Magna Carta II. Because when those barons went down that field at Runnymede to meet the king, they didn't know if they were going to come home alive. They did come home alive. They wrestled freedoms from the king. And that is now why I'm calling it the potential for Magna Carta II, to take back holus bolus all the freedoms that we surrendered over the years, to create a very new world. Not in the likes of the great resetters at all, but based upon traditional values, family, religion, risk-taking, those values that made democracies way back in time, certainly made North America. That's what we have to rekindle.
Absolutely. I would not disagree with that at all. We really need to bring moral value back into our society because we've really lost it. We're on a slide right now that our morality levels in our society are just right at the bottom of the barrel. And, you know, I've studied history a little bit, Doc, in my life, and I've looked at societies in the past. And when societies in the past have reached a level of deep depravity that we see now in our society, those societies have fallen apart, whether that's going to happen to us or not. But I see no morals in our society anymore. I see everything that was good when I was growing up as a child turned to bad, and everything that was bad as I was growing up turned to good. We've had a complete flip-flop. And where do we see society now? We see society on the verge of collapse. We see a society that is just totally divided. We're in despair. Suicide rates are going through the roof. Just everything that seems to be bad is happening to us on a large scale.
Yes, it is. It is. But I am hopeful when things get so bad. It's funny in history. Leaders do tend to emerge at a time of great urgency and peril. I'm hopeful that when the scale of this sets in, not just with COVID. COVID is the principal instigating dawning, you might say, of the point of the spear. But I'm hopeful. I mean, democracy is a very, very fragile beast. It's democracy is, I say it at rallies now, democracy is in the ICU. It only got there because of the failure to apply effective early treatment. And don't rely upon your doctors to get you out of ICU, Miss Democracy, because the doctors have got stethoscopes stuffed in their ears and they can't hear a damn thing. And they're all concerned with their pocketbook anyway. So it's up to the general public, deputized doctors, to get Democracy out of the ICU.
How about we just get doctors to stand up to their sacred oath? We'd see a change, wouldn't we, Doc? I mean, I've lost faith. I've lost faith in doctors. I really have. Go ahead.
Surveying the medical scene, I mean, I'm now 77. Medicine has transformed compared to the medicine I joined. GPs are now wanting to clock off at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock to play golf. And anyone that gets sick afterwards, well, you can just go to a medicenter or go to the emergency department. You know, not interested. You know, they don't do house calls. They don't get up in the night. You know, the way I was trained in medicine was you don't distinguish whether, you know, you're dealing with an addict or someone with a heart attack. You do house calls. You operate on a belly full of shit, regardless of, you know, who, what the lifestyle was of the person that you're operating on. That's gone out of the window. It seems to be so money driven now. The new breed of doctors want all the status that goes with the doctor title without the responsibility that goes with it that we've earned over centuries. So, yeah, medicine has changed. It's become more of a status thing, a way of earning money, instead of it being a servant of society, which is the medicine that I was trained in.
Well, I remember growing up, doctor house calls were a regular thing. And like you said, that's been changed, and it hasn't been changed for the better, that's for sure. Where it's going in the future, I'm not sure, Doc, but I know that we see a lot of people very, very sick in our society, more so now than I think ever before. It seems to be increasing. Lots of different things that we could talk about that's driving those increases. Maybe we could do that again on another show sometime, because it's always a pleasure having you in. We only got a couple, 3 minutes left here, Doc, so I'm going to let you share some maybe of your last thoughts as far as maybe telling people what you think about them going getting a booster, and I'll have to let you go again, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you can't be unvaxxed, but you can prevent a bad situation from getting worse. There is absolutely no purpose in being boosted, taking these booster vaccines. They're not doing any good. They're not active against the emerging variants. So it's quite pointless subjecting yourself to cumulative increase in risk if there's no benefit. The other very important thing for people to hear about is, of course, the new, very simple, very effective methods of prophylaxis of preventing upper respiratory viral infections like COVID. And that is the use of iodine. You get a bottle of betadine from the pharmacy. You dilute it 10 to 1. Very important. You then put 4 drops in each nostril as you're lying down, feeling it trickling to the back of your throat. It's been shown to be much more effective than ivermectin at prophylaxis. ENT surgeons and dentists have been using it for the longest time for that very reason. So live well, get your hypertension under control, your diabetes, your weight, and consider vitamin D, of course, on a daily basis, especially in the winter. Every Canadian is vitamin D deficient in the winter, and it's a very powerful boost for your immune system. So there are ways to mitigate things personally, and of course the bigger issue is to bang the desk of your MP, MLA, your doctor, your church leader, your school principal. You've got to have your voice heard if we're going to make progress.
One last question for you, Doc. When a person is vaccinated, there is no way to remove those contaminants from your body, correct?
That is correct. There is no method known to medical science to be unvaxxed. It's in there. And it's particularly concerning, of course, because we're now seeing evidence that the RNA can be permanently incorporated into DNA,
right,
which is contrary to the traditional dogma.
pretty scary road we're going down, my friend. It really is. It's almost, I want to go back to rotary telephones.
Well, we're only in this space because we've given up our freedoms little by little over decades. Wokeism has taken control of every boardroom of multinationals, every institution you care to look at. Wokeism is rampant, but we can get rid of it.
We have
with a 20-year slog, we can get rid of it.
Well, let's get on it because the time is getting short and their power is growing exponentially as we speak right now. Their power is growing. So we've got to put a stop to this. You know what? I know it. I want to thank you for coming in today, Doc, and sharing some of your thoughts. It's been a pleasure, as always.
My pleasure. I'm sorry to have been late.
Oh, no problem at all. Like I said, it's a pleasure having you in, sir. And hopefully you'll join me again sometime in the near future.
I'd love to do it. You bet.
Okay, sir. Thanks very much for coming in. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, that's a wrap for this week. I've enjoyed a lot of the conversations. I like having people in, even though some of their opinions I don't share. It's always good to hear other people's opinions. I hope you guys join me next week. Been a lot of fun. And you guys all have a great week. Bye for now, and God bless you.